We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So we do have some super chats here, Vince, I want to get to, and some of them are, we appreciate those, all of them very, very much. But let's get back up to those here, Vince. We have one from Joe Papiti. Joe says, great dominating win. This is the team we've been waiting for all year. The Freeman mindset is finally sinking in. I can't only imagine what this team will be with a legit QB. Bring on USC. I mean, we have seen – here's what you have to be careful of as a fan. When your team has a great performance and you just automatically assume this is, we've arrived, you know, this is who we are. I think the reason there's so much more confidence about this game, Vince, is twofold. And I want to tell, I'm going to say this. I want you to tell me if you agree or disagree or nuance it, whatever you want to do with it. Okay. It's that we have been building to this because we did see it against Carolina to a degree. They just didn't finish. We saw it against BYU to a degree. They just didn't finish. Then we saw it against UNLV to a degree. They just didn't finish. And then we saw it against Clemson. And then we're against Navy. We're back to where it was. You show the flashes of the dominance, but then you couldn't finish. And I think coming out in this game, and I wrote about this in my key takeaways for the offense, was the way the offense came out and just buried BC was important to me to see, because it told me that they're like, they didn't let that funk from the second half of last week get to them. And if anything, if you watch the offensive line play, it's almost they, I even said this to somebody tonight. So it looked to me like they were playing like they were really ticked off about how the run game worked last week.
Yeah.
Like they were mad and they were going to take it out on BC because they were destroying. I mean, BC's got some good sized physical kids. They were blowing them off the ball. Vince, just like you said, collapsing sides of the line. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen that this year, you know. And you know that's kind of the thing that you like to see, is like they responded with that attitude, that mindset of, hey, we're a little ticked off, you know, and we're not gonna let that happen again. And then to come out in the second half, you finally get the ball after they had two possessions because of the muffed punt. In your first drive, you just run it right down their throat and put it in the end zone and say, ball game, right? And it's like, okay, yeah, they've taken that step. So to me, what I think has so many people excited about it is it's not that they finally arrived in a week in game 11. It's that we've been building to this and we've now finally seen it enough to where you say, okay, yeah, this is who they are. They just got to clean up some other stuff. That was one of my big takeaways from it. Along the lines of what Joe's thinking as well.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, and I think, you know, not only is the Freeman mindset finally sinking in, I think the Freeman as a head coach is starting to sink in. You know what I mean? And I'm talking from Freeman's standpoint. I think he's finally feeling confident and on steady ground with where he is. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not going to continue to evolve and get better as time goes on and all of that. But I think we're finally seeing a consistent head coach of this team. And I think that's huge because the team is only going to be as good as their leader, and they're going to follow their leader, okay? And you're starting to see that his attitude is now permeating through the team. They are following his leadership because I think he is now a leader of an entire program. Did a great job as a defensive coordinator when you're a leader of half the team. Great job. That's not being a head coach. There's a lot more that goes into that. And so I think we're finally seeing him be comfortable in his own head coaching skin. And I think that's huge. I think that's absolutely huge. And people don't, I think, give that enough credit, if I'm being honest. So that's exciting for me to see. And I think we definitely saw that in this game because against Navy, they started out fast. They did great. They were ready to play that game. And then they obviously took a step back in the second half. They were ready to play this game against BC. They dominated the first half. And like you said, as soon as they got the ball offensively, man, they put no doubt. Like, hey, interception, give the ball back to our offense. Offense goes down and scores in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plays. Boom, 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 boom. Just in case you thought you might be coming back, that's not happening. So it was good to see from a foundational program standpoint, this team is rising. They are where they need to be at this point. Let's see if they can continue doing it.
Next super chat is from Brand. Actually, no, I want to get to this question here from DC Irish. This is the one I wanted to talk about. Wonder why they didn't play Angeli at all in the second half. So I was told this summer and by a couple people, and I should have done more work on it to find out for sure, that bowl games, because of the transfer rule, that the bowl games now were not going to count as one of the four. And I don't think they should. Especially since so many kids are now transferring out and going to the portal before the bowl game. So many kids are opting out that you shouldn't count it as one of the four, but it does still count as one of the four. So Steve Angeli's played in two games so far. He played against UNLV and he played against Syracuse.
Yep.
And so if he would have played Saturday and let's say something happened to Drew Pine against USC and they had to go to Steve Angeli against USC and Drew Pine's out, if you look at the bowl game, they have one of two options: play Angeli and burn his red shirt and try to get it back next year, or you play Ron Paulus the third. And I don't think they wanted to put him in that situation.
Yeah.
So, because he's the backup quarterback. If something happens to Drew Pine, they've got to go with him. It's not ideal, but that's why they are, because they did force him into the game against Syracuse. Right. This is where they are, where they are.
Right.
And I think that was a decision I didn't quite understand. I mean, Coach Freeman made a choice. He made a call, and, you know, it is what it is. But that's why they weren't able to play him.
Right. And you know, if something happened to Drew Pine in this game, of course, Steve Angeli is coming in. But it got to the point in that game where they only had, what, three possessions in the entire second half anyway?
Yeah. Well, they weren't going to play him if they had seven possessions.
No. I know. But, like, the way it even worked out, it was like, you know, we got three possessions. It's not even worth, you know, it's a snowstorm. You're handing off anyway. You're not going to gain anything. We want to hold his red shirt. Nothing happened to Drew. He could go in and hand off during these last couple possessions. There it is. And now you've got him. Now you've got, you're guaranteeing him a red shirt for this year. And who knows, man? None of us have a crystal ball, but that may be important down the road. You don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. We'll see. So if you can do it, you want to make sure that you have that opportunity.
Yep. Here we go. Next one from Brandon. Brandon, this is big, man. I really, really, really appreciate this very much. Awesome. This is awesome. Brandon says, I listen a lot and don't contribute enough for time spent listening, making up for it. And I appreciate that very, very much. Listening to Ben Morrison's post game, he reminds me of Tebow with his words, his personality. Is he known to be a vocal leader? He could help lead a great backfield in the future and be a good example on and off the field.
Nice.
So from what I've been told, and again, thank you for the super chat, Brandon. What I've been told is Benjamin's kind of a quiet kid, not shy, but just quiet. He doesn't have the Tebow personality from the standpoint of Tebow was an intense dude, a very, very intense dude. Benjamin's more of a, you know, he'll talk trash, but it's kind of like, you know, low key. And he's, from what I've been told, he's a pretty quiet kid. I think leadership comes in different forms, as you know, Brandon, and as we've talked about in this show. Some guys are leaders because they're in your face. They're the rah-rahs. That's the Tim Tebows, the Manti Te'os, you know, guys like that. Other guys are more vocal leaders by just how they go back their work every day. The Quentin Nelsons, the Zach Martins, you know, who are not going to constantly get in face guys' face, talk a lot of trash, be the look at me, and there's nothing wrong with being the look at me guy. I mean, somebody has to be that face of your program. I mean, there's a need for that type of thing. I'm not talking like a selfish TO type of thing, you know, but more of like just the outgoing, loud, vocal guy. You know, I've mentioned this before on the show, talking to Alex Bars one time in an interview, and he's talking about, you know, Q wasn't just a leader because he would say what needed to be said, and he would get on guys when the guys needed to be get on. Trust me, Quentin Nelson wasn't just sit back and be a quiet kind of guy. But the greatest leadership that they said Quint never showed was just by what he did.
Yeah.
He was going to work his butt off. It was a Tuesday practice leading up for this game against some nobody team, and Q was bringing it. And I mean, that meant you had to bring it because he was setting the agenda, and you knew that if you are slacking and not getting on it, you didn't have to worry about how Coach Easton. You had to worry about Q first, then Coach Easton. And he's like, you know, because if that dude's bringing it, well, you know, you need to bring it. And I think those are some of those ways. And I think Benjamin Morrison is going to be more of that type of player where, you know, he's the leadership by he's working his butt off in a weight room. He's always going to class. He's getting good grades. He's doing the work. He's in the community. And then he goes out and dominates on Saturday. And there's a need because you can't have 85 vocal guys. Right.
That doesn't work.
Right. You can't have 85 guys that just do, you know, lead by example. You need that nice blend.
Need them all. Absolutely.
Right. That's right. And so I think that's the kind of leader we're going to see Brandon Morrison eventually become. Right now, I'm not worried about him being a leader. Just go play ball. You've got enough. You've got DJ Brown, Houston Griffith. Yeah, you got Houston Griffith back there. You got DJ Brown. You got Brandon Joseph. You've got Tariq Bracey. You've got Cam Hart. You've got Clarence Lewis. You got enough dudes that have the experience. You have one job, dominate. Play your game, focus on you, and do your job. And that's going to be the key for him.
Absolutely. But it's going to be to sit back and enjoy it. Absolutely. And it's like we were talking. I remember we had kind of this conversation, a similar conversation about Michael Mayer 2 years ago. It's like, hey, just sit back and enjoy it because you're probably only going to get 3 years of it and it's going to be worth every second of your time. So just like you said, get your popcorn ready and enjoy the Benjamin Morrison show because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Next super chat from John Monty. I saw that too. Thank you, John, for the super chat. Appreciate you. I saw that too. He never looks to the run. Talking about Drew Pine, never looks at the running back coming out of the flat. It drives me nuts. He just doesn't look that way. You guys rock. Go Irish. Appreciate you, John. And hopefully he starts. You know, hopefully he starts. That's going to, I mean, look, now's no better time than now, right? Maybe he can steal 20, 30 yards against USC because you take a couple checkdowns because they're just not going to defend it. Most teams don't defend that route that way. They'll defend it by having the hook curl guy, the hook curl, and then, you know, come downhill if they throw the swing. Most teams don't just run with a swing route because then that's fine. Yeah, run downhill the swing and watch me run curl flat at you all game long. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's what we'll do. I mean, I'm going to run curl option swing all game long and say, have fun trying to defend it. If you're going to fly a guy downhill to take away my swing route, you know, from a check down swing route. But yeah, you've got to hit that a couple times. You've got to make people respect that. Or if they don't respect, you just keep going to it. I mean, we saw Jack Cohn do this against Oklahoma State last year, like early. Remember, like he just was like, nobody's open. He just threw a little swing pass to Chris Tyree and he ran like 25 yards, like just like that, nothing. Because there was nobody there. He just took it and went with it. And I think that's going to be a big key as well. And then the last super chat from David Reeb. Thank you, David, very, very much. Thanks for all your guys' hard work and for the barbecue at the Clemson tailgate. Go Irish. Well, that is more for my mom.
As I say, that's she's the one that's straight at Mama work. Driscoll. Yeah.
That's right. I just show up and eat and talk, and I'm good at those two things. So she does all the hard work. She does all the hard work. And I appreciate you coming by and appreciate the kind words. And I'm glad that glad we're able to meet and have some fun. So we'll have hopefully more of those next year. We'll have to see. It's just they're a little bit more challenging to put together than I think maybe some people realize when you consider all the other things we have going on.
I know, right? So,
yeah. We'll see how it goes. But anyway, now that's the end of the Boston College Breakdown. So you know what that means, Vince? It's now officially when we hit end of this show. It's officially Southern Cal Week.
I can't wait.
Absolutely.
It's the best week of the year. And this is the true rivalry. You can, there's a lot of fake rivalries out there. There's a lot of trophies out there. Whatever, man. This is the rivalry. This is the one that I get fired up.
And there is a trophy involved, but I can't tell you what it is because I've never cared enough to know.
I think it's the Shillelagh.
It doesn't matter. That means it doesn't matter to me. All that matters is beating Southern Cal, right? Like, that's enough. You know, like I don't even care about the trophy. You know, it's about you got to beat Southern Cal. And that's what I grew up on is just great. I mean, when I was coming into being a Notre Dame fan, it was late 80s, early 90s where, you know, those are always big games. I mean, I've talked about this before, Vince, you know this, but my first season of really remembering Notre Dame was the 88 season. I was 10 years old. Well, Notre Dame plays USC at the end of the season out in LA and it's number one versus number two. That was my first experience of Notre Dame versus USC was number one versus number two. Now, obviously, in Notre Dame, a game Notre Dame won. The next year, Notre Dame's number one and USC's number nine, if you remember that. That was the Todd Marinovich's game. Rodney Peete was the quarterback in 88, and that was Todd Marinovich's freshman year. And a game where Notre Dame turned it over a bunch and still won the game against number nine USC. 1990, they go back out there. Notre Dame's number seven. USC's number 18. Notre Dame wins 10-6. 1991, Notre Dame is number five. USC was is not ranked that year. 1992, Notre Dame is number five at USC, who's number 19. If you remember, that's a game where Reggie Brooks went off against USC. And then, of course, 1993, Notre Dame was number two. USC was not ranked that year. They weren't that great that year under John Robinson, but hey, Notre Dame got it done. And that was an era of dominance from Coach Holtz. They tied the next year. Notre Dame was unranked in 1994, but USC was 17, and they tied 1995. Notre Dame was number 17. USC was number five. Notre Dame won 38-10. Kind of similar to what we're seeing now when you say events like 17 Notre Dame.
I like it. Number I five take USC. That one. I take it.
Right. And then, of course, 96, Notre Dame was number 10. USC was unranked. That was the first and only time Lou Holtz ever lost to USC was his last season. And then that began a stretch of games where USC and Notre Dame went back and forth a little bit, but it really was kind of what it really kicked off USC's dominance over Notre Dame. Like, you know, Notre Dame won again in 99. At home, they went out to USC in 2000, if you remember that game, and really smacked USC pretty good. And then after that, you had one more win in 2001, and then Ty shows up in 02. That also happened to be the 01 game. Also, if you remember, Vince, do you remember what the 01 season was? That was the beginning of the Pete Carroll dynasty. Bob Davey beat him that first year. So Bob Davey was 1-0 against Pete Carroll. The next year, Ty Willingham gets in his first year, and USC kind of took off and won eight straight games. And then Brian Kelly broke that streak in 2010. And now Notre Dame's kind of – it was a little back and forth early on in Kelly's tenure. Notre Dame has dominated that stretch here in recent seasons, but obviously USC is a much better football team now than they were then, and much more talented team then. And I'm not a huge Lincoln Riley guy. I think he's a little bit overrated as head coach, but he's a very good – great offensive mind, and he's way better than – Clay Helton. There's no doubt about that. So this is going to be a fun week.
USC fan would agree with us.
SB with a super chat before we get out of here. He says, from feeling as bad since Ty Willingham through halftime of Cal to feeling like the ship was righted to the debacle that was Stanford to raging enthusiasm about next Saturday Notre Dame is making me a manic. Hey, look, I get it. But hey, you know what? That's what's so great about this game, right? It's just the emotion of it. But I don't know if I felt like the ship was righted against BYU because you could still see some of the is this team can really finish? But I have to say that the Stanford loss to me, Vince, was as dejected as I had been in a very long time watching Notre Dame play. And even like, you know, because like Miami in 2017 was a really bad loss, and Michigan in 2019 was a pitiful loss. But at least you kind of felt like those were good teams. But just it was just the weirdest game to sit up to, like, I don't know what's happening right now. Like, I don't understand. Is it the fourth quarter already? Like, what is happening right now? It was the most bizarre game, bad team. And to see that team rebound the way they did, where 2 weeks later they are curb stomping the number five team in the country, I don't know if I've seen that before, you know? And you're talking about the greatest thing that I can say about Marcus Freeman is when things got the lowest, whatever he did, it worked. Because this is what Notre Dame has done since then. 41-24 win, 41-24 win, 35-14 win, 35-32 win, 44-0 win. If I'm reading Notre Dame's tweet correctly, I'm going to actually pull that up so I don't get it wrong, Vince, because I thought this was a wild tweet. So let me just pull this up. And it was from the Notre Dame PR tweet. So let me just make sure I get this correct, Vince. They tweeted this out after the game, and it was about, here it is, at 44 points, Notre Dame reaches 35 points for the fifth consecutive game, the first time the Irish have achieved that feat since 1943. Wow. Notre Dame has never scored 35 or more points in six consecutive games. So I want to point out something about that 1943 era being the deal, right? 1943 happened to be an interesting time for Notre Dame because it was right before World War I. Notre Dame went 9-1 that year. It was actually a year that Notre Dame won the national championship. And then, of course, the interesting thing is the next 2 years, Notre Dame, Frank Leahy left and wasn't at Notre Dame the next 2 years because of the war. Notre Dame went 8-2 and 7-2 the next 2 years. And then when Frank Leahy returned in 1946, it began a stretch of the greatest stretch of football in Notre Dame history. From 1946 to 1949, you want to hear this, Vince? This is an absolutely insane statistic to me. So from 1946, beginning in 46, to 1949, Notre Dame went 36-0-2. They had a recruiting class that never lost a college football game. 36, it went 8-0-1, won a title in 46, 9-0 in 47, won a title, 9-0-1 in 1948, and finished number two, and then went 10-0 in 1949 and won a national championship. In 1948, the blemish, the thing that kept them from a title, was a tie at the end of the season to USC. And that's what makes this rivalry so great. Both of these teams had a great deal of football success in their history, Vince. But both teams would have a lot more success if they didn't play each other. Notre Dame would have – Arab Parsegian would have at least one or two national more championships if it wasn't for USC. USC would have some national championships if it wasn't for Notre Dame. And I think that's the thing that makes this a great rivalry is that – it's two programs steeped in great tradition that are polar opposites that for so much of our lives, these games meant something. And I'm going to be honest. I always want Notre Dame to beat USC. USC is the one rival I don't root against because I want them to be good when they play Notre Dame because that's what makes this rivalry great. It's like with Michigan, I want Michigan to be 0-whatever when Notre Dame plays them. I want them to lose every single game. What makes this rivalry great is when both of these teams are exactly what they are right now, which is two really darn good football teams. And we've only seen that once in the last 10 years, and that was 2017. My hope is that this weekend looks a lot like that 2017 game in Notre Dame's favor, but we'll have to see about that. We'll have to see about that. So anyway, Vince, that's going to do it for this show. That's Vince Dodaro, everybody, my guy, my football analyst. I'm Brian Driscoll. Vince just had his first undefeated pick'em of the year. Vince went 4-0 this weekend because he picked he was the only person of all the IB crew people that picked Oklahoma to beat Oklahoma State. And then Vince and I also both picked Oregon to win. And, of course, everyone on staff picked Notre Dame and USC to win. So, Vince, 4-0. So you gained a little bit on Ryan.
Gained a little bit.
Charging hard. Yeah, I think you actually tied him for second because he went 2-2. He picked Oklahoma State and Utah. So
going down to it, too.
You're tied for second. Yeah, tied for second. And you gained a game on me because I went 3-1. I picked Oklahoma State, so you gained a game on me as well. So well done, my friend. Well done. So
every dog.
Thanks, everybody, for being with us. Like, subscribe, notifications, bell, board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. 5-star reviews. We'd appreciate it. More importantly, stay safe. Have a great night, and we'll see you again soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.